Before we jump into this episode, are you subscribed yet to the free weekly teacher bulletin? Get a weekly wrap of our latest content straight to your inbox. Join our community by clicking on the sign up button at our website, teachermagazine.com. Hello and thanks for downloading this podcast from Teacher. I'm Jo Earp. Welcome to episode 8 of the School Assembly podcast series. So if you haven't heard this one before, we explore what it takes to build a school from the ground up. And in series 2, we're following Jo Camusato and her lovely team out there at Beaming Secondary College. Now that's a dual campus site in the Melbourne suburb of Truganina. Thanks to my wonderful colleague Dom Russell for stepping in for episode 7 last month while I was exploring the delights of New Zealand on my holidays. But I'm back in the interviewing chair for this one, and our topic is meeting individual student needs. I caught up with Jo just before the Easter holidays to talk about differentiation, subject choices and external partnerships to bolster the existing staff expertise. I hope you enjoy the episode. Hi Jo, thanks for joining me again. I missed out on our chat last time because I was away in lovely New Zealand, but I'm back in Victoria now, although we are catching up online. And we're going to talk about meeting individual student needs today. And that's something actually you've spoken about a lot, I think, in our conversations. I know that you're really passionate about the students being individuals, that they have their own interests, their strengths, their experience, and everything they bring to the learning with them. And then, of course, the backgrounds and the cultures too.
Yeah, it is actually very important to me. And it's good to see you again, even though you might be on the screen. I think it sort of stems also from my understanding of how kids learn. And when I say that, it's really from my studies in educational psychology as well. So, you know, I have a bit of back knowledge on how to read and understand psychological cognitive assessments, language assessments, assessments to do with neurodiversity or ADHD, or what kind of screening and diagnosis goes behind these kinds of assessments. And it's, I suppose that's added to my own experience as a teacher and observing kids in the classroom and working with them. So, and of course, adolescence has always been a time where young people begin to explore how they are as an individual. They, you know, want to wear their uniform a little bit different. They want to do sort of certain things in their bedrooms, you know, wreck up the paint. They want to add their own personal touches to their laptops, to their phones, everything that can identify them differently from someone next to them. But, of course, it's always interesting because they still want to be part of the peer group. So for me, I think the word differentiation and the emphasis on that has been part of my work for a long time. However, it's formally acknowledged in, you know, even our department document, the high impact teaching strategies. You know, differentiation has its own chapter and section about what that looks like, what it looks like when it's being done well. But it is a challenge for teachers because more and more, I suppose, in our schools, in our government schools, there is a range in your classroom and it's no longer one size all fits. It's very much about catering to the point of need to each individual students and adapting resources or creating resources from scratch or enabling kids to engage with the learning. And it's a hard skill because I don't feel, well, actually, I take that back. It's been reported to me by many of my early career teachers and many teachers that this is not an area that is focused on a lot in teacher education. And so when they're met with it in their classrooms, they can be very challenged. That skill is not there yet. Some people are naturally good at it because it needs a form of creativity and others find it hard.
Mm-hmm. It is, isn't it? It's a very hard skill. In terms of subject learning then, you're a secondary school, so you're in that territory of electives, which is exciting. And that really throws open so many possibilities these days. When I think about, like, you know, the choices I had going back and the choices that are available now, and particularly in Australia as well, which has also had that element of sort of the trades and the vet kind of side of things. With this new school then, how have you gone about meeting those individual student needs on subjects that they desperately want to study? I can imagine you've had to get quite creative then sometimes to make that happen.
Yes, well, you might remember it sort of started back with us going into our P-9s, our Prep to 9 colleges, and my assistant principal actually sitting down with the Year 9 students and doing learning profiles with them. What interests them? What do they enjoy? What are their strengths? What subject areas do they really want to explore further? And then we match those creatively with some ideas for student choices. It's still been a challenge because often, you know, when you're 14 or 15, you choose something and you think it's going to be about something in particular, and you've read the blurb describing it. But of course, then when you're in the actual classroom or you're engaging with the program, it's not quite what you thought. So even something as simple as ethical eats, like we have students who have chosen a food elective, and they're cooking regularly, but some students have said, oh, I don't actually like cooking. Well, you know, this is the subject. And so it's a realisation, oh, did I like it as much as I thought I did? And now I'm supposed to be doing it once a week for a semester. So I suppose whenever you're structuring student choice and, you know, while meeting the core, because we don't teach everything through student choice subjects. We deliver our core subjects, English and maths and humanities, you know, to all our students separately. But I suppose there is also, you need to have a bit of flexibility to move students around out of things that they've chosen that they actually are not motivated by. But that's the whole idea, isn't it? To see what you want to do and then realise next time around I need to make a different choice that is about what I really want to do. I thought I wanted to do this, but it's not what I thought. It has taken a lot of collaboration with teachers, and because teachers were given a skeleton idea and then they've had to flesh it out while they're planning everything else. But I think overall it has been successful, especially when I moved the timetable around so that they weren't all on the same day. It's added a different sort of evenness to the week, and also given the teachers a bit of breathing space between when they take these different subjects that they're still planning for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting to hear. You do get quite a bit of movement around, but I guess that's only natural. I mean, as you know, as adults, when we take a course, we're like, oh, actually, I don't really fancy this one. I've started it. So
yeah, and you know, some people do that at uni. They start a course and they realise they're paying money for a degree they don't actually enjoy. And if they're onto it, they move sideways very quickly into a different course, or you change directions completely. I mean, the challenge for us right now is that after Easter, we have to also design what we're offering our students at year 11 and 12, the final years of school, VCE, VM, VET. These are all, I suppose, it's what's to be expected. And we do want to offer all these pathways for young people, but we have that development running parallel to also reviewing and revising and adjusting our year 10 program. And then, of course, in the scheme of all this, we've got our year sevens, and we mustn't forget them, because there needs to be a plan made for year eight. And also further down the track, how does that feed into our year nine program? What will that look like in 2 years' time? You can't sort of plan one thing without having a vision for the other. And these are, I suppose, when people hear about new schools, this is part of the complexity of the work. That's not all done for you. You've got to work collaboratively to do it and tap into resources outside the school, department people, you know, anyone you can find really who can give you support in this way, and also to help develop ideas.
Mm-hmm. So that's the thing I wanted to speak about next, actually, expertise outside the school. You've got a lot of expertise within the school, and that's great. But we know that schools can't do it on their own, and particularly in terms of meeting different student needs. So there's the subject kind of things, the electives and what have you, and that kind of support. There's also, you know, mental health support, welfare support, support for families, the support, things like language therapy, speech therapy. How do you go about bolstering that? Is that like a principal job as the figurehead of the school that really you should be the one approaching people, or is that something that you can delegate?
It really depends, Jo. I suppose part of my role as the public figure of the, you know, the leader of the school, and the principals are often used for many things like that. I am always on the lookout or listening for potential partnerships and who I need to meet to bring in, I suppose, opportunities for the students. So as I was talking to my own team, my leadership team here, about developing what year 11 and 12 looks like, you know, we've met with the Wimbe Len and we're discussing with them VET opportunities for next year and how the cluster works. At the same time, at the end of last year, there's a Department of Education supported initiative called Head Start, which works with young people around school-based apprenticeships. And I have a Head Start person here who's based here once a day a week, who works with other schools, but they're centrally based here. And that was a strategic move to make sure that we have these connections as a new school. In relation to the mental health and, I suppose, allied health support, that takes a bit of time. It's not necessarily all part of my role. I mean, I am listening for funding opportunities, what other schools are doing. But I do have an assistant principal for student wellbeing and engagement. I do have a mental health practitioner, two full-time youth worker counsellors who also have their connections of what we can bring into the school. But believe it or not, sometimes I walk through the yard and someone will come bounding up to me. A student will say to me, oh, you know, when I was at my previous school, we did these really cool activities with Wyndham Youth Services, you know, can you come, or with this local football club, or with a multicultural youth group, you know, can we do something with them again? And I think, well, that's not a bad idea. You know, I try to connect those students up with the staff member who maybe has that brief. I don't at this stage, some new schools have, but I haven't used my budget to employ or to support a speech pathologist or an OT. However, you know, we do have access to the Department of Education Student Support Service officers, and we can request that support. And in previous schools I've worked in, as the school has got bigger and our population has grown, I have certainly added various allied health individuals into the team to give a sort of extra rounded support for our students, because, you know, there can always be more services. That's probably a good way of saying it. There can always be more services. I've also met some interesting people. Like, I've started to meet with the police liaison officers to find out what's happening in proactive policing. We've met with people who work for the Department of Education in helping to establish senior school reform. So you keep sort of trying to connect as a new school, because that some of them don't know we're really here, or they've heard vaguely about us and they've driven past, but they don't really know what's going on. So it is an ongoing, I suppose, responsibility of mine to continue to make those links and invite people into the new school community.
So we started by, you touched on differentiation a bit, and I just want to sort of return to that just briefly before we ask the usual three questions. So I was thinking, meeting student need on the academic side of things, we need to firstly find out where they're at. Yes. Otherwise we're not going to meet the needs. And I wanted to pick up on something that you mentioned in the last episode. So I'm going to quote you here. You said differentiation's an interesting one, because sometimes people go straight to the students who have more challenges, but I think we don't mm-hmm. do enough talking around how do you differentiate to extend the students that are cruising along. I think that's a really great point. So a key thing is for, firstly, your teachers to identify where students are at and always be aware where they're at. So there's the monitoring side of that, but then trying to push those at the top end, isn't it?
Yeah. So look, when We did receive some data from some of our schools, learning data, as the students transferred into the senior campus and as they came from their primary schools into year seven, but not enough really, you know. So part of our assessment schedule for term two and the whole year level assessment schedule, we will be using some assessment tools like PAT reading and PAT, you know, maths to sort of get a baseline data. We will be using another reading tool for the maybe the junior students for year seven called Dibbles, which give us an idea of their reading level, just to see how that lines up with teacher judgment, which we can access through some Department of Education platforms. So we have a platform called Panorama here where we can start to go in and have a look at what's transferred across in terms of teacher judgment for our students and see how all this lines up along with our own common assessment tasks that students, that teachers are doing now and collecting work back from teachers, collecting work back from students and, you know, assessing according to rubrics. And I do stand by what I say. I think if you're a student who's capable, that you're in the middle range, you know, in the middle of that normal curve, you're not disrupting the class, you're capably doing your work, completing tasks. There's a real, I think we've all experienced it, there's a real danger of us not looking at, well, how can we help that student achieve more? I don't have the answers to all of this, but I think part of it is to discuss it openly. Because where do we go first? We go to the young person who will express that they're not engaging with learning by acting out. Their behaviour is a communication tool and they will disrupt a class or not wanting to attend a class or cause something to demonstrate I'm not understanding the work. But when you understand the work, you might be a little bit cheeky, but there's not too many of those. Usually you're quiet. Usually you're relaxed. Usually you're cruising. You feel proud of what you've achieved, but no one's really seeing if you can do more. So I suppose the challenge for all of us in this space in schools is to go, well, what's in our curriculum documentation? Are we actively discussing and planning for stretch? So that's got to be there even in the, you know, physical format in the documentation, stretch nearly underlined, you know, at above level. But even at, you know, at level, what's the stretch for at level? Discussing it is very important. And then I suppose being aware that in a sort of staged response, because you can't do all this all at once when you're building teacher capacity and building the school culture, helping your leaders become leaders, really. But in a staged, planned response, how do we tackle building teacher skills in this area and identifying and supporting the students to identify they can do more? And there's lots of ideas around that. Is it students setting their own learning goals, but are they setting learning goals that are aspirational? So it's a complex area, but I think even in my role previously, I haven't discussed it enough. I haven't mentioned it enough. And I think this time it's a bit more at the forefront of my own brain that we need to go there earlier. We shouldn't be waiting for this. We need to have this discussion simultaneously as we work with students who need differentiation because of their learning difficulties. We've got the rest need it as well for other things too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay then, so before we go, as I mentioned, the usual three questions then. I've changed this first one. I'm not going to say hurdle anymore. I don't think either of us liked hurdle. I'm going to say challenge rather than hurdle. Key learning and proudest achievement since the last time that Dom spoke to you, actually, which was last month.
Yeah, I'm going to go back to boring old time. Time is really, I don't know. I mean, I know the time goes fast. I feel quite, you can even probably hear it in my voice, people listening to this, that I'm a bit raspy. I feel like I've run out of time this term and thinking already of next term. And we have a lot on our plate with senior school registration coming up, all the paperwork and documents and policies and course outlines have to be in by the end of June. And I feel like a student. I don't know if we've really started. We have got timelines and we're moving towards, you know, putting more pen on paper, so to speak. We've started, but it is a pressure. while we continue to build school culture and get to know our families as well. So that is, it is a sort of challenge, time for myself, time to work with others, and then just time in the week, literally time in the week.
Not good. Key learning and proudest achievement.
I think, I'm not sure if we had our family barbecue since we last spoke. I persevered with the year seven welcome barbecue with the families, despite there being lots of weather forecasts of extreme heat. I kept cancelling. And the fact that eventually went ahead with over 200 people, and we only have 114 year sevens, was really quite remarkable and exciting. But it was more about the dialogue between the parents and the teachers and how proud and excited they were to be on the junior school campus. Running parallel with that, as many schools around Australia will know, this is sort of nearly the end of Harmony Week. And next Tuesday, I've sort of set up an opportunity for parents to come to the senior campus. I've invited all parents, though, across the school, year 7 to year 10, to participate in the middle of the day in a multicultural celebration morning tea. And, you know, sometimes people look at me and go, who's going to come to that? They're all working. And I go, oh, yeah, just see. And it's interesting, by using some very key words, what happens. So I have 40 parents booked in at 10 o'clock next week, which is actually really a big achievement when you've only got not that many students. I suspect there will be more, and I will invite student leaders and other students who've performed as part of Harmony Week celebrations to come along. And I'm really excited about that, because yet again, for me, it shows that if you approach the wider community and our families in the right way, that they will come. They do really care about their children. They just want to feel welcome, and they just want to feel that they can come into the school and talk about what's important to them. So I look forward to that next week. But even though it hasn't happened, I think that's a really big achievement for us, in making sure that we are covering all the things we want to do in 9 weeks, because it's only been 9 weeks when we get to the end of next week. There's been a couple of public holidays in there and curriculum days at the start. So it's a bit of a whirlwind, really, the beginning of the year.
Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot to celebrate, and it's great that you keep celebrating things as well and doing these events where you bring people together. Sounds like you're making some fantastic relationships there with the parents and the community, so well done on that. I am going to let you go now and rest that voice and maybe grab some honey and lemon, and you have a fantastic Easter break. Do manage to grab a rest, hopefully, and I'll catch up with you next month.
Thank you, Jo.
That's all for this episode. Thanks for listening. If you want to keep listening now, you can access more than 300 episodes in the Teacher Archives. Just head over to teachermagazine.com or wherever you get your podcasts from. There's plenty there to keep you busy. And to be absolutely legendary, if you could please leave a review on the podcast channel to help other educators like you to find the podcast, that would be fantastic. And it's also a really great support for the teacher team. Before you go, are you currently subscribed to the weekly Teacher Bulletin? It's a free weekly wrap of our latest content straight to your inbox. Join the more than 40,000 educators who are already part of the community by clicking on the sign up button at our website, teachermagazine.com.